the man that will be speaking at Vlad Jr.'s Hall of Fame induction ceremony in about 25 years, Jonah Carey, on the line right now. Hello, Jonah.
How are you?
25 years, is that, you know what, that might be too soon, because the guy's going to have a 20-year career, probably be able to play into his 40s, and then what's the 5 years? So, yeah, maybe closer to 30, you think, Vlad goes into Cooperstown?
I mean, that's about right. Honestly, he's already done enough in my mind to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't think he needs to play anymore.
Yeah, once he hit the Montreal home run, you thought, yep, that's good.
you're like the signature moment of 2019. Homeboy, what about 2018? That was the signature moment of the Blue Jays season two. Both of the signature moments for the Toronto Blue Jays, an actual major league team that plays games, occurred in non-games that didn't matter. So that's pretty interesting.
What about the Kendrys Morales home run streak that happened?
You know what? That was... I love when, Ryan Goins. Was he on the team last year? He bunted one time. That was great.
Ryan Goins. Yeah.
Actually, that was fun, Ryan Goins, last year. You reminded me that when he went to the Royals, everyone was so angry, thinking, why did they let him go? Why did they let him walk to the Royals for nothing?
Because he's likable and his skin color is similar to the fans who make that team clear.
Yeah, possibly.
Maybe.
So are you a person of the Derby? I think the format's pretty cool. I mean, yeah, it's not everything, but and it's for kids generally. My son had a good time. Are you a person of the Derby?
Honestly, I'm a person of the Derby when Vladimir Guerrero Jr. participates. Really, honestly. Like, I'm whatever about it. I don't care that much. The year that Hamilton hit a bunch of bombs was fun. But for the most part, it's like, okay, 16 homers, 14 runs, a lot of homers, whatever. It's not that interesting. I care about games that matter. But it was really fun last night. And you're going to double overtime and triple overtime in these rules I never knew existed against Jock. I like Jock, too, by the way. I'm a Jock Peterson fan. So I just thought that was it, man. I mean, that matchup was the whole thing. And the best moment in the history of this contest, which has been going on for, I don't know, what is it, 30 years? They've had the home run derby, whatever. It was really, really something. And I think that, you know, as much as I'm in the tank for Vlad Jr., if you take bias out of it, I think you can make the case that it was the highlight of this home run derby for as long as it's existed.
Yeah. Was that your biggest takeaway from last night? What were you thinking when you were watching it?
That it was fun to see guys go head-to-head in the elimination format. Like, first of all, hitting that number of home runs was absolutely impressive. And tribute to Schneider, too, by the way, laying those pitches in there really nicely. I thought that was well done. They practiced this, right? Like, it was actually, you know, people are trying to do analysis a little bit of this stuff. But Vlad Jr. went and practiced with the same guy who was throwing pitches and said, okay, here's what we're going to do. And, you know, the guy who throws it needs to keep fresh, too. So if it's a high fly ball, that's when I'm going to swig a drink. If it's this and it's that, I mean, there's a little bit of stuff going on behind the scenes, which I thought was cool. Then the sheer number of home runs was impressive. Then Peterson tying him was shocking. Like, I mean, not that I doubt Jock Peterson's a great player, but just to go and tie him up was really great. And then the drama just kept building. And the hug, the way that Vlad Jr. hugged Peterson and Peterson hugged him back. Mm-hmm. What was the tweet? It was like meeting. Let's get back to this later in the show because it was the best tweet ever. It was so freaking funny. I died laughing. Oh, here it is. I've got it right here. It was, when you meet your ex's very friendly new boyfriend. And that was the caption. It's just like, that's so perfect. Michael Clare, by the way, at Michael Clare, S. Clare, was who tweeted that. It was so good.
Yeah, that's great. No, that was the moment. And, yeah, I don't think the history books will remember Pete Alonso won the whole thing, although he's a deserving champion. He has a lot of home runs this year. But, yeah, it's not unlike that Josh Hamilton, Justin Morneau home run derby where Morneau won it, but nobody remembers that.
You know what was great about that? Oh, sorry.
Let me just say this, by the way. No, I just want to say this. So we're saying, you know, and that's kind of the theme, right? That, yeah, you know, Alonso won, but really Vlad Jr. stole the show. We are diminishing the accomplishments of a Hulk-like rookie who has 30 home runs at the break. Like, that guy's not even interesting enough for you.
No.
That's a really good sign for baseball, by the way. Pete Alonso, meh. Oh, he might hit 60 home runs as a rookie. Who cares? That's nothing. Like, that's good. That's really good. That means that the youth of baseball is well-served here.
Well, that was what I was thinking about yesterday, was the people who seemed a little upset that Vlad Jr. was going there because he didn't have the production, right? The home run derby should be more of a reward for people who have put up some production, and Pete Alonso fell into that category. Vlad Jr. did not. But isn't it a great sign that baseball is acknowledging, we're going to go with the kid who people want to see over something more antiquated? I won't even say antiquated, something, but that's more fair, that this isn't about fairness. This is about entertainment.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I wanted to see Dan Vogelbach for the same reason, just to get to, you know, the real sick boys in there. Just get them all. Just, you know, with Santana and Vlad, and then go Vogelbach, and he trumps them all. That would have been nice. But, I think that that's good, and it's a tribute to to understanding and paying attention to what's going on. You know, it's subjective, right? This stuff is subjective. Like, I really like Yordan Alvarez. He might have won this thing by himself, too. He hits bombs right away. He's got more than 30 home runs combined between the minor leagues and the major leagues. So I think you could do a lot of stuff. Ted Berg, who writes for USA Today for The Win, he suggested that it literally be open to all comers. It'd be like the U.S. Open. The $1 million prize is out there, which, think about it for a second. $1 million prize is out there. The major leaguers get a bye to the quarterfinals, but every quadruple-A slugger who's ever, you know, your Phil Hyatts of the world, the guys like that who kind of crapped out, and they get a shot. And so it could be Christian Yelich versus some guy for the finals, and some guy could win $1 million. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's like the FA Cup where you've got these teams that are, sure, the players are semi-pros and they could be playing against Manchester United or those long-haul bombers. I know Joe Carter's a member of them, and they tour around major league facilities doing home run derbies. Like, one of those dudes, getting to a semifinal against Vlad Jr., that would have been awesome. I think you're right. We're going to move off the derby in just a second, but the JD did raise kind of an interesting point about the premier all-star event across all the major North American professional sports is the slam dunk competition. And I don't think that the Derby is there, but like, how close is it? Could it pass it? Because this format seems like pretty legit, and people, I mean, maybe we're too close to it because Vlad Jr. was the story yesterday, but it feels like
and people caring about being there though too.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think it could be there with the slam dunk competition?
I think in as much as baseball can start to approach the NBA in popularity and glitz, sure, I don't know that it'll ever catch up, but I think that's because basketball has eclipsed baseball more than one thing is not as good as the other thing. But, you know, on a relative basis, if basketball is sitting here at a 10 and baseball sitting here at a 6, then maybe these two events are like a 9 and an 8.5 kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that it's a way for baseball to get beyond the public consciousness and maybe get people who are younger than 56 and not necessarily white interested in the game. I think that there's something there because it's missing. You know, the average fan is old and fits a certain demographic and is male and so on and so on. And we want to have different people watching baseball. That's the goal. So, you know, I think that having different faces out there is good at different events is good. And Vlad is young. He's Latin. He's exciting. I think that there's a lot of good stuff there. So I'm all in favor of all that stuff. I think that it just goes to expand the popularity of the game. I think that baseball as a sport, and I'm going to make a possibly a tortured analogy, but here we go. Tampa Bay, the argument is, why are they going to play half their games in Montreal? Because we can't put 50,000 people in the stadium for 81 games a season. I think that's right. I think that unless you play in, you know, only a handful of markets, you're going to run into that problem. So I think baseball needs to peel off what's interesting. Another thing that which was suggested on Twitter, you know, related to the home run derby, let's have like a red zone channel for baseball. Mike Trout is up. Perfect. Click to Mike Trout. Christian Yelich is up. Perfect. Click to Christian Yelich. Why not try to get the most exciting elements of baseball rather than pushing back on that and saying, no, you got to take your vitamins and you got to watch the Padres play the White Sox. How about if we just get to watch Mike Trout every time, no matter what's going on? Mike Trout alert, cool. Like, I think that would be, or Vlad Jr., I think that would be great.
Okay, when it comes to the parameters of growing the game, and you mentioned the glitziness of the NBA, you're not really going to be able to replicate that or even, I think, come close to it in today's era. Just not the two, comparing the two sports, I don't think anyways. But with Vlad Jr., the showmanship, the name, the pedigree, the body, the ability, is there anyone in baseball right now that is more important to the future of the game and achieving some of those goals that you just outlined?
Maybe Aaron Judge, because of the size of the market. Like, if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was a Yankee, forget about it. My God. Like, it would be times a million. So I think that it's unfortunate because Toronto is a big market. All respect for the Blue Jays as an organization, all respect for Toronto as a city, but it just is what it is. We're sort of, it's the same with basketball, right? Like, LeBron is, he's LeBron, but he's still more interesting as a story as a Laker. That's the argument, you know, that's where we get to. And so I think that it could be that a guy who has a little bit less charisma, maybe similar ability or whatever, plays for a different franchise, might have a little bit more oomph to him. But having said that, I think the Vlad has a chance to carve something out. And I think it could put the Blue Jays in the public consciousness in a way that we didn't expect too. Like, when Ichiro played for the Mariners, all of a sudden the Mariners in Asia, in Japan in particular, but Asia in general, it just became a draw. It was like, oh my God, the Mariners are on. We totally have to watch this. We're going to watch every Mariners game because our guy is there. You know, from a Major League Baseball perspective, maybe the Blue Jays, they could be muddling along at 82 and 80, but they could draw a lot of interest because that guy plays for the Blue Jays. That would be the bonus for the Jays here, is that this guy transcends and he becomes a gate attraction and a TV attraction that goes beyond just he hit 30 home runs and drove in 100.
Now you're just making me mad because I'm remembering that someone tweeted out yesterday, we're all so disappointed. We all missed out on so much because Ichiro never participated in one of those home run derbies. Man,
yeah.
I would have loved to see.
Well, speaking of fan favorites, right? I mean, wouldn't you want it? I think that you could start to – and that's the thing. There's no objective measure. It's not like Ichiro hit enough home runs, but obviously Ichiro should have been in the home run derby. There's certain guys you know have to be – it could be a certain type of body type. Like, I think Altuve should be in the home run derby because I want to see Altuve and Aaron Judge in the final because, my God, Aaron Judge could eat all day Altuve. That would be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he's getting the 440 bonus 30 seconds, Altuve. But yeah, I would like to see it. Talking to Jonah Carey. All right, so Vlad, he only has 8 home runs this season. The numbers across the board aren't overwhelming. He's not getting smoked, right? Like he's respectable, but his slugging percentage is 21 points below American League average. Do you put anything into the numbers he's put up so far this regular season, or is just a 20-year-old getting his feet wet?
Feet wet, but there's been hard contact. The thing is, he's making a lot of his hard contact on ground balls. So, you know, people are like, well, this is terrible, and the home run derby, and it messes with your swing or whatever. I think that he's not a dummy, and he understands that he wants to hit the ball in the air. But who the heck knows? Maybe he puts him in a different mindset, and he's like, hard contact. All right, I'm selling out completely. I'm shooting for the moon. Because he does go to all fields, and he is an intelligent hitter. But maybe in this day and age, you know, you're getting too cute by half by trying to, choke up and hit the ball to right field and dunk a single in there. So maybe there is something to that. I think the ability is there, and the hard contact is there. It's just got to go skyward more often. He should be more of a fly ball hitter than he is. It will come. And we're being impatient, waiting for it to happen.
Well, the dude who is hitting fly ball is Gurriel, and you wrote a terrific piece that's up on sportsnet.ca right now that people should go and read. And when I read it, my biggest takeaway was, oh, this Gurriel stuff seems more sustainable than I think I was giving it credit for. Was that yours as well? What did you come away with after you finished that piece?
First of all, I will say, and I've said it with you guys on the air, that I did not like Gurriel as a player.
Yep.
Based on his minor league numbers, more than once I've said it, I was quite critical of Gurriel. I said, you know what, you look at his numbers, I do not see it. And it's not like he's a young prospect, he's 25, like that's young enough, but there was nothing in his profile. His age wasn't there, his numbers weren't there. I just thought, he's all right, you know, maybe he can carve out something for himself, but I was not impressed. Super wrong, super duper wrong, and I'd say that right out front. And it's because he's changed his approach, and it goes to show that if you change your approach, like this happened to Justin Turner and Josh Donaldson, and we know all the stories already, like it keeps happening over and over. This guy changed his approach. He went to Buffalo. You know, I talked to Guillermo Martinez, and I said, so tell me, give me the secret sauce, man. What happened? What did he do? Did we talk launch angle all day? Did he do some sort of rocket study? He said, no, he just didn't want to play second base and shortstop anymore. And he went to the minors and he chilled the F out, and then he got better. I was like, thanks for the insight. That was great. But, you know, I tried to add some numbers and make it interesting. Maybe that's it. You know, maybe he just had a little bit of hype around him, and it wasn't not as much as Vlad, but it wasn't going well. And he just got to relax and he got to focus on playing left field, which is an easier position. And the offense plays. You know, what Martinez said was that Gurriel is very smart, a very hard worker, that he does study film, that he does pay attention to tendencies and all that, that he did change. The one thing that he said that he did change was he tried to meet the ball more out in front of the plate instead of waiting back on it, which is something you hear from a lot of hitters, that, yeah, launch angle, this, that, but where is the point of connection? That if you wait for the ball to get deep on you, that's good for batting average maybe, but not necessarily for home runs. You want to be out front and really just, you know, shorten the path of the ball so it doesn't break on you. That's the way to go. So there's something there. And if you look at Gurriel's slugging percentage against breaking balls, this killed me. He's got the best slugging percentage against breaking balls in the majors, better than Yelich, better than Bellinger, better than Trout. That was a shocker to me. That's a really good sign. And again, super duper wrong. Jonah wrong, Gurriel good.
Well, yeah, and that stands out because you're usually right about these Blue Jays. That's why I laughed, or JD laughed when I said, yep, when you were like, you were wrong. Because, yeah, you've been right on just about every Blue Jays player that you've had to predict the outcome
so
for.
Let's say, though, that this, like, that Gurriel Jr. is not a flash in the pan, and he does turn out to be a stud at the dish. What does this do in terms of the progression of the Blue Jays rebuild?
I think the rebuild looks pretty good. I mean, you mentioned Danny Jansen earlier, too. there's some good stuff happening. The position players are looking nice. I saw a ranking of pitching prospects, and somebody put Pearson right between Kopech and Forrest Whitley. Jeez Louise, that's pretty good, too. Like, I mean, I think there's something happening here. So, good. And we haven't mentioned Groshans and Bichette, who are not up yet, and they could be interesting. There's something there. And I think, and I'm writing a piece for this week, and I'll give it away a little bit. It's my five wishes for the second half, like what I want to see the Blue Jays do. One of them is sign Marcus Stroman. It's enough with this business. Let's build for the future. I don't know, man. Maybe the future is now. Maybe Gurriel's hitting bombs and Vlad Jr. only has so much time under team control or whatever, and you're trading Stroman for a guy who could be good in 2023. The heck with that. Stroman's good now. He's still young. Just sign him. You've got unlimited money because you dumped all your other contracts. Just sign the guy. He's your one pitcher. Fine. Aaron Sanchez, you can move on from him. You could build the rest of your rotation, the other four guys. But I think you build around Stroman. I know that it's not the exact answer to the question that you were asking me, but it just goes to show, I think that there's a lot there. And I think that sometimes you're not as far away as you think. Sometimes it turns pretty darn quickly. The Braves went from being bad to winning the division pretty darn quickly because their young guys came up and made an impact. Why can't that happen to the Blue Jays? I don't know that it's next year, but if you keep Stroman, you bring up Pearson, you make a couple moves, it could happen quicker than you expect because these guys get good and mature much quicker than we expect. Gurriel's good now. Vlad is going to get there probably quickly. Biggio's, struggled at times, but there are signs. There are signs with these guys. And I think that if you sit back and you say, well, we got to be patient and wait. Yeah, no. I don't agree with this patient and wait. I think you push a little bit.
No, I'm with you 100%. You're playing the hits talking about re-signing Marcus Stroman.
Our show might as well be called Good Show, the show that talks about re-signing Marcus Stroman all the time.
Yeah, but why can't it happen next year, Jonah? Because you mentioned all those guys. They're all going to be here. Bichette is going to be here in a couple of weeks once one or both of those middle infielders and Sogard and Galvis are traded. He's going to be here. Everybody that's part of this next wave is going to be here position player-wise. We know Baraki's working his way back. The pitching staff is always going to be the question anyways. But, yeah, why can't it be as early as next year that they're, like, hovering around 500 and maybe pushing for that second wild card in the American League?
Because I need to be convinced that management's going to spend money. It's as simple as that. Zach Wheeler's a free agent. Go out and throw a ton of money at Zach Wheeler. Whatever, something like that. That's really what it comes down to. I don't dispute that there's enough position player talent. They could get good really quickly. That's certainly possible. You've got to show me. The fact that they're talking about trading Stroman or whatever indicates two things. Number one, this thing about behind the scenes and maybe in the locker room, he's this and he's that. This is all BS and it's trumped up garbage. It's PK Subban stuff again and it's terrible. And the second thing is, I think it's just, we dump Stroman, perfect. We get another salary off the books. Rebuilding is not supposed to be an excuse for Rogers to bump their stock price a little bit. Rebuilding is supposed to be a reason to do things. It's supposed to be exciting. It's supposed to be you make your way back. You can spend money and rebuild at the same time. Two things can be true at the same time. I don't see why, especially, if anything, because you have these prospects making $550,000 a year who are good, like Vlad and Jansen and Gurriel and all, because, well, Gurriel's making a little more, but you know what I mean? Because they're so good and so cheap, that gives you license to throw $80 million at Zach Wheeler or whoever. It gives you license to give 60 to Stroman. You can go out and do this stuff because your roster is cheap. Encarnacion's gone. Bautista's gone. You already cleared the decks. You can stop now. You don't need to take every single penny and pinch it until it turns blue in your hands. You can stop now.
Yeah, you can throw $52 million at Randall Grichuk. Whatever. No big deal.
That's a bad deal.
Honestly,
Randall Grichuk is a bad baseball player. That's a very different story. And we knew that coming in. And you guys were very correct to be critical of that, as you should be. He's not good.
We have a certain baseball mind in the building right now who the other day in passing just said, what you need to do is release Grichuk. We thought, yep, we're with you, yep.
In the first year of that deal. It hasn't even kicked in yet, but get rid of him. Jonah, great talking to you as always. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, pal.
Thanks, fellas.